Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hub Arkish, 670 The Score, senior football expert.
What are your general impressions of that defensive group? Did anybody in particular stick out to you?
I mean, yeah, we have a lot of great players on the defensive side of the ball. Of course, Khalil Mack, Bo Jackson on the back end. But, I mean, we have a lot of great players. Definitely should be fun, you know, coming up for training camp.
Executive editor of Pro Football Weekly, Shaw Media Analyst and sideline reporter for Westwood One.
I know you guys were really good at Ohio State, but did you notice the difference? I mean, how big a step up does it look like now that you see these guys?
I would say the biggest difference is definitely the front seven. But the DB's not really that much of a big difference in size.
Hub Arkish
with Bernstein and Rahimi on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Let's talk some Bears and some NFL with Hub Arkish, who is on Twitter at Hub_Arkish. He of Pro Football Weekly, Shaw Media, and The Score. You can check him out on Twitch. You can see his bearded visage right now at twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. And he's with us on The Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sportsbook. Anything happening in the Bears world, Hub? Do you want to start macro with the stadium story, or do you want to start micro with actual practices and players?
I would like to go wherever you guys want to take it. It's your show. Good to be back with you. Yes, there's a few things happening. And, it's what I think is one of the storylines that's getting buried because there is so much happening is that, you know, just what was it, 3 months ago? They were the biggest disaster in the NFL. Fans were leaving. Don't want any part of this organization. Fire them all. They're one of the hottest stories around the NFL right now, both on and off the field. So I think the way they've changed the conversation is certainly interesting.
We did hear Justin Fields speak yesterday. What were your biggest takeaways from what he said, especially after this yet another round of practice for him?
You know, Lele, you've been doing this for a while like I have, and you know what these off-season things are all about. I didn't have any specific takeaways. You know, I've gotten to talk to him, you know, a few times now. Obviously haven't met him in person yet, but we did just get news yesterday that will happen now in training camp with, you know, certain restrictions. I am just very impressed by the young man. He is, in terms of how he presents himself and his attitude and his approach and his maturity, he is everything you'd want in a kid that you just kind of stake the future of the franchise on. On the field, watching him the last few weeks now, he is, again, as advertised. The athleticism is real. The arm talent is real. He is bigger than you realize until you see him up close. But all those things, you know, continue to be true about almost every quarterback drafted in the first round. And now we get to the hard part. You know, does he have the feel for the position? Does he have that innate sense? Will he be able to read the field? Will he, you know, subconsciously or without thinking, be able to make those sudden moves that separate the great ones? That's the part that we're not going to find out until he becomes the starter. And, you know, that is, I'm tired of that conversation, guys, but there is a little kind of waffling in there now because of, you know, what happened on these Zooms the last couple of days. And, you know, Matt Nagy was forced to say, and in part by me, I guess, that he's not just taking reps with the number two. He is the number two quarterback. He followed that up with they're competing and they can change. So Matt's just trying not to get himself backed into a corner. Andy Dalton is absolutely the opening day starter. Now, if something were to happen, I don't want to see anybody get hurt, but if he were injured, if he, you know, got the virus, whatever it may be, you'd think you'd go to the number two. But that kind of defeats the purpose of Justin Fields being behind Andy Dalton. You know, I mean, if he's ready to start because Dalton can't, then he should be ready to start because Dalton can. And so if Dalton couldn't week one, week two, I would think it would be Nick Foles based on this, quote, plan that we've been told about. But at least as of, I can't remember now, I think it was yesterday. It might have been Wednesday. That's what Matt Nagy told me.
Wow.
Wow.
That seems so overwrought. It really, it just, from everything we know about, this is not really a developmental prospect. This is a big time star on a big stage. And if he's really that far away, to me, it's an issue of it's just too hard, that whatever you're doing is too difficult. Because if this guy right now can't pick it up and can't be ready because the terminology, or he can't get the calls out, then that's on you.
Yeah, I mean, if the terminology is too risky or too much, and that's the problem, that's on, you know, Matt and his staff. But, you know, guys, that's the story of this position in the NFL. There are so few. You know, there's Marino, there's Roethlisberger, there's Russell Wilson. I challenge you to find me another one who stepped in and was successful right away as a rookie. You know, some are better than others.
Herbert.
So we think. I mean, he had a nice year statistically. What were they, a 5-11 football team? You know, so there's still more to learn there. Yeah, I'm very impressed by him. I'm not trying to knock it. But again, Dan, here's the thing. They moved on from Phillip Rivers. They committed to a rebuild. They didn't want to play Herbert, but he ended up on the week two because of the accident, or whatever you want to call it, with Tyrod Taylor. And so he went out and he put up numbers, but he wasn't really expected to win, and he didn't. This team is expected to compete and win. It's a really important difference that people can't ignore. Of course, Trevor Lawrence is starting in Jacksonville and Zach Wilson is starting in the Jets, because if they win 4, 5, 6 games, that's a big improvement. And that's the direction that franchise is headed. This franchise has told us they think that they can do both, that they can compete right now and develop the quarterback. And so there has to be a different plan. And then I can't agree that it's, you know, that weird or that uncalled for, because you've got a case study, and that's Patrick Mahomes. You know, I mean, who was the guy? Who was the offensive coordinator who oversaw that plan that sat him on the bench until week 17? He's become a perennial all MVP candidate. And so this idea of not putting him out there too soon clearly works. You know, the question is, what is too soon?
Hub, we focus so much on the offense, rightfully so. But are we paying enough attention to what's happening defensively, given what happened with Eddie Goldman, and trying to figure out also the health of Robert Quinn?
Yeah, I think that Eddie Goldman in particular is an intriguing story, because it's obvious that the Bears aren't telling us everything. And in fairness to them, there are always reasons not to tell us everything. And, you know, sometimes that makes some sense. But I can't imagine what's going on there. You know, Matt Nagy just told us 2 weeks ago how pleased he was to see Eddie in the building and how great he looked and how excited they were to have him back. And so the natural assumption is, next up, okay, here he is. And then he's not here for a mandatory camp. And now they're not really giving us any information as to why. So that is a real curiosity. I like this kid, Kyrus Tonga, but the only nose tackle on the team right now is your rookie 7th-round pick. And that leaves you dangerously thin. You know, remember John Jenkins could play the position. He's moved on. Brent Urban could take snaps there. He's moved on. Mm-hmm. It was not successful when they tried to play Bilal Nichols there. That's not his best position. You can put Akeem Hicks there, but then you're giving up a lot at the 5 technique. So, you know, Eddie Goldman is pivotal to this thing, and we just don't know what's going on there. It'll be interesting to learn more. I can't imagine, if he's not there day one training camp, then you can't pretend that this isn't a problem anymore. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and Olin Krutz made the point of, like, find out. Like, they have to actively be figuring this out and not getting behind the story. Like, mm-hmm. Go fly out there, talk to him, and work on this. Don't be passive about it. Do you agree?
Well, yeah, that's what bothers me so much, is I don't believe they don't know. I think they know exactly, and I don't think it's particularly good, and I think that's why they didn't want to share it. But that's not based on anything anybody's told me. That's just, you know, decades of experience doing this. I don't understand how he could have been here a couple weeks ago and everybody could have been celebrating, and now suddenly he's not here and they're not sure why. I think they know exactly what's going on, and the fact that they're not saying anything about it tells me that it may be a little more worrisome or a little more troublesome than they told us so far.
Well, and we're just left to speculate. Well, meanwhile, I said this yesterday, and I want to say to you, you know, Sean Desai pointed him out as one of the major keys to this defense, that his presence was remarkably important here. The coaches are counting on him to be a part of this.
Yeah, and let's not, you know, go overboard. I mean, Eddie Goldman is a very good football player. He's not irreplaceable, but he could be irreplaceable at this stage of this offseason for this coming season. And so it's clear that it is critical to this defense and to Sean Desai. And again, it could be much ado about nothing, but when they present information to us like this, they leave us with nothing but to speculate. And so, you know, that's all we can do based on experience. And we've seen these situations before. So I'm very concerned about it. You know, as far as your question, Layla, about the rest of the defense, you only see so much, you know, in these mini camps, and they don't have pads on. There's no contact. They looked to be in pretty good shape. It looks like there's going to be a fierce competition in that secondary. There's a lot of interesting talent there. There's no Kyle Fuller. But there is a lot of interesting talent, and we saw enough last year to believe that the Jalen Johnson could be really good. As much as you can see in these things, Kendall Vildor is one guy who did flash, you know, regularly out there, and so he, I think, is going to push Marcus Trufant. And we got to remember, you know, Artie Burns and Tease Tabor are other veterans, you know, high draft picks that are here now too. So I'm not overly panicked about the secondary. I guess I worry more at this point about Eddie Jackson being Eddie Jackson again than how they're going to fill that other corner in that nickel spot.
Do you know what the plan is for having fans at Halas Hall for training camp? Because I'm not, this all seems sort of working against itself in a way. You design your practice facility to be private and secure and difficult to access, and that's fine. And now they're going to open it up? Are they gonna? Is this just gonna be friends and family and partners of you know, corporate kids of corporate partners? What's the deal with fans in training camp?
You know, Dan, I'm in a tough spot here. I do know a little bit about it from a couple people I was talking to during camp this week, but it was off the record, and I think I could cause problems for them if I shared too much of it. So I can't really get into the specifics, but I guess to try and answer part of your question, they do hope to have fans as soon as, you know, the opening of this training camp. They do have an interesting plan for it. I'm not a big fan of it. And it would be limited in scope. You certainly wouldn't see anything like the Bourbon A crowds. And they are working now on the logistics of it. So there is a way it can work. I don't know. I don't personally see the great benefit in it because it's not going to be enough. It'll be a bigger number than you think, but it's still not enough fans to move the needle on their fan base. And I don't know what they really accomplish by it. Now, if they're calling it fans, but in fact it's going to be first call for sponsors and suite holders and something like that, you know, that might make more sense. They're paying enough, you know, and based on the size that I've heard that they think of a crowd that they can get in there, that seems more likely. But all I've heard so far is that the plan is still the hope to have fans for this training camp at Halas Hall. I can tell you, I've heard enough about the logistics. It wouldn't compromise any of the security they have there. There's a way that the fans would be actually screened at a location off the site before they were brought or allowed in. So they can handle that part of it. But big picture, I don't really see where the benefits meet the costs, if you will.
Well, you mentioned also at the beginning of our segment that the media access is going to change. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that we did get finally the release from both the league and the PFWA, the Pro Football Writers Association, in the last 48 hours. The plan is to be done with Zoom, to be able to do in-person press conferences. The plan is to be able to do interviews with players on field distanced. So we're still trying to, I mean, you know, the distance is obviously 6 feet, so that's manageable, but there's still some logistical issues there. I mean, you know, for instance, you have to be able to record these conversations if you're going to report accurately. And so it's some things that seem silly, but could be as simple as they're going to have to tell the players they're going to have to hold the recorders for us.
Or some podium or something like that.
Yeah, there's going to be little things that you don't think of. We are scheduled to be allowed back into the media room in the building for the beginning of training camp if we are vaccinated. All media members must be vaccinated if they want to be allowed to do in-person interviews. Basically, they've expanded this Tier 2M, which through last year, Pat Finley of the Sun-Times and I were the only ones in. There will now be 25 spots in Tier 2M. And you have to be vaccinated to be in the tier. That will allow you whatever limited access we have to the building and the players. And it's a little vague right now if we're going to be continuing to test at all. I know now for Tier 2M, we're just testing once a week because we've been vaccinated. So I'm not clear yet on how that's going to work.
How about that memo from the NFL and the Players Association where they laid out the differences between fully vaccinated players' privileges and those who are not fully vaccinated? That was pretty hardcore stuff from them, basically saying if you're not vaccinated, you're going to lead a miserable life in this league.
Yeah, it's a strange situation, Dan. And you know, I don't understand why anybody would be an anti-vaxxer, but I do understand that people are entitled to that opinion and that decision.
No, they're not. It's stupid.
Well, no, they are. It's stupid, yes, but they are entitled to it, and we have to respect that. That's the price of our democracy.
I don't. If somebody wants to hit themselves in the head with a hammer, I don't respect that decision. They can do it. I just don't respect it.
I don't respect the decision. I respect their right to make it, and it pains me to do it, believe me. But anyway, where I'm going with this is that it's interesting, though, because I would say that you probably, I don't know that they're anti-vaxxers so much as we forget that these are kids for the most part. You know, some of them are literally teenagers, not many, there's 19-year-old, but they're early 20s, mid 20s. Many of them still have decisions being made for them by their parents. And the ones who have not gotten the vaccine have indicated to us either a reluctance to talk about it other than to acknowledge it. Or, you know, to say that they're researching it, which I think is kind of funny.
It's not their job. They're not researchers.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to trust the CDC more than the internet, you know? So, clearly the league gets it. Clearly the players get it, but clearly they have the same legal restrictions as the rest of us in terms of forcing it. So the players, the leaders of the Players Association have taken the approach, let's see if we can, you know, embarrass them into it, shame them into it, or scare them into it. But the one thing that even I would hope the anti-vaxxers couldn't dispute is that the seriousness of the virus is decreasing shockingly rapidly for people who are vaccinated, and it may be getting worse for people who aren't. And so obviously that's the purpose of the memo.
That is the truth. And as far as the stadium is concerned, just your thoughts on a possible Arlington Heights location. And also, I think some context that you can give when it comes to Ted Phillips making the statement he did.
Yeah, Layla, it's interesting. I wrote yesterday in my column, I didn't even realize this until I was out walking the dogs the other night, but this is going to be my 45th year on the beat. And
congrats.
It's just a number, but it's a lot big number. And the point is that one of the first stories I covered was this surprising announcement that George Halas was threatening to move the Bears to Arlington Heights. You know, and there's a great piece in the Tribune. I don't know if it's just in the Trib or just online today, but it's just a timeline of all the stadium stuff going back to 75, when this first started. And they have threatened to move to either Arlington Heights, Barrington,
Hoffman Estates.
Hoffman Estates, South Bend. I don't know how many times the Bears have done what they're doing here. And nothing other than the initial announcement has ever come of it. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't take this seriously, because what is different this time is that the world has changed dramatically since the last courting of Arlington Heights, and now it's for sale, and it's right out there. So I don't think you can dismiss it, but I think you have to realize that this is as much a negotiating tactic with the Bears as anything else. I wasn't shocked that it took Mayor Lightfoot an hour or two to make her statement that, sure, once again, as we're trying to negotiate improvements to Soldier Field, they're going to do this. I'm not accusing anybody. I'm not saying that's true. I think that the Bears have to take a serious look at this. I thought, as far as Phillip's statement, you know, he's right. They have an obligation to consider all their options. And guys, the angle I took in my piece, it's at shawlocal.com if people want to read it, is that as of literally 3-4 weeks ago, Forbes came out with their updated list of the most valuable franchises in the NFL. The Bears are seventh. Of the top eight, the Bears, the Cowboys, and the 49ers are the only three who don't own their own stadiums. The Cowboys are first, and the 49ers are fifth, I think. But Jerry Jones owns most of what's around AT&T Stadium and got an incredible sweetheart deal. You know, the state of Texas decided to pay for his stadium instead of taking care of their power grid. And in the case of the 49ers, you know, they've got one of the newest palaces in the league and all kinds of extra revenue lines coming from the suites and the club seats. The Bears are seventh at $3.5 billion with one of the worst stadium deals in the league. If they built their own stadium, they would clearly be the most valuable franchise in the NFL. So this makes sense if they can find the wherewithal to do it. But what's not going to happen in the most recent stadium deal, Mark Davis is a nice comparison because he has no family wealth, much like the McCaskies, and yet he got a $2 million Allegiant Stadium built in Las Vegas because it started with $750 million of taxpayer money.
Right.
Can you guys imagine any scenario in the state of Illinois right now where the taxpayers are going to come up with $750 million to build a stadium for the Bears?
Absolutely
and
not.
And after that, Davis still had to come up with another $1.25 billion. And he got this mysterious $650 million loan from Bank of America that all kinds of investigators are still trying to figure out how that worked, because you can't pledge your equity in the team against a bank loan. Mm. So now you ask the question, well, how does this happen? The answer is, if the Bears have a real estate developer, some hedge fund, just some wealthy billionaire who thinks that they can make money off the overall project, the 326 acres, they could pull something together, because from the research I've done so far, it looks like you could put a really nice state-of-the-art stadium in 100 to 120 acres, which leaves you a couple hundred acres to build all kinds of other things that could be revenue-producing. But the Bears can't do it. The McCaskey family doesn't have that kind of wealth or that know-how. So what we have to find out next is this just another negotiating tactic, a threat? Do they have a potential partner in the wings who could make this happen? Or then there's option three. I don't know what this is going to cost. Have you guys seen any estimate as to what Churchill Downs wants for this property? I don't even know where to guess. We know there are multiple bidders. It could be that the Bears just buy it and then hold it, because it dramatically enhances the value of the franchise when they eventually do sell it. Because at some point it's going to get sold. And, you know, I don't know when. So I think these are the three things we have to watch. It's going to be a story going forward. In the early part of this, the next year or so, it's going to be just like the last 22 times it's happened. But what we got to look for now is there someone in the wings? Is there a partner for the Bears to do this? Because if there is, then this starts to get very serious.
Well, it also gets serious if, in fact, the expanded footprint, if you're talking about retail and housing, and if you're doing, I mean, you could do residential, you could do entertainment. If you're talking about something that really could benefit an area, then you may have real discussions about what taxpayers may want to do if it is going to add to improving everything.
But Hub also brings up the good point. Vegas is a place with a lot of population growth. Texas has inherent population growth built in. That's why they were able to pay for some of these facilities and thusly not invest in the power grid to have it fail. So I think in this case, we have to look at it from the opposite viewpoint, Hub, and that's an excellent point.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Lila. I wasn't taking a shot at Texas.
Oh, no, you can. It's pathetic and funny.
Everybody
I know back there having to deal with this. Yeah, it's different, though, because it's a bureaucracy issue. Like, the municipalities are different from the grid. But the whole point is it's a population growth that allows a lot of these stadiums to be built the way they are.
But here's one other piece. I'm guessing you guys may have to run soon, but you got to keep in mind, brick and mortar real estate is not a great investment right now based on what we're coming out of with this pandemic. You know, 5 years ago when Kroenke used his own money to build SoFi, that's a $5.5 billion development. The stadium was only $2.2 billion. but he's got a bunch of commercial real estate in there now, and brick and mortar stores that they can't fill. And so this is a very complicated process. It's not as simple as let's go build a new building. And guys, next time we talk, we got to talk about access, because the biggest concern with Soldier Field that I always hear is the access. And anybody who knows the track out there knows that with only 53 in neighborhood streets, I know there's the one metro stop, but that's just one metro line. I think access there would probably be worse than Soldier Field, not better. And that's something nobody talks about. But it's all going to be the conversation as we go forward over the next few months.
Hub, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend. Dan, have a great Father's Day.
Oh, you too, Hub. Thank you. That is Hub Arkish. And next up, Matt Nagy said something about Justin Fields that I actually really didn't like. It just sort of an alarm bell that rang for me for, I think, reasonable reasons. So I'll see if you agree when we come back next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Go 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
For him, is matter of fact, I look outside right now and I can see that he's out here talking one-on-one with some of our tight ends on a specific red zone concept that we had. And I think that stuff like that is when you're communicating and talking through why something didn't go the way you wanted it to go on a particular play, and you talk through it. Now, after you see these guys talking, you want to see the next time they run the play, you want to see it come to fruition. And that's the steady incremental improvement that he can have, and you learn timing. And so probably the tempo in and out of the huddle, the play results, and then being able to bounce back from any type of good and bad play.
Matt Nagy talking about developing Justin Fields. And is it reminding you of something, this idea of...
Don't do it.
Don't do what? I have to, because there's... That's not what set me off as much as the phrase that he used. A particular phrase, and it wasn't steady incremental progress, because remember, that was always a Trubisky buzzword, steady incremental progress, right? There's something else. And this was the one that was kind of like, yeah.
Guys are going to make mistakes. You just don't want to make the same ones. And I've been very impressed with him as it relates to that.
That was the John Fox version, and then it was Nagy saying doesn't make the same mistake twice. And that it was reminded me of every year with Mitchell Trubisky, every year when they came back, doesn't make the same mistake twice. Even though he constantly made the same mistake. So that would always sort of punctured the mystique for me was this idea. They always said, Mitch doesn't make the same mistake twice. And then once the season starts, he makes the same mistake over and over and over again. And it bothered me that they were getting to that again.
Yes. I do think in this case, though, it might just be something a coach is saying because he hasn't seen the same mistakes made in this OTA rather than...
Okay. In general, is that a characteristic? It's not sort of... saying like this is about him. This is just sort of about what we actually saw in the results.
Do I think your concern is valid? Yes.
Okay.
But here's Because you know the process, Dan, and what we have to convince ourselves of this to not get too excited is the idea that there's a certain list of what they want to see out of a player at this juncture, especially a rookie for this time. Like, there is some sort of operating procedure that goes on there as far as what they need to see.
And look, Hub and I disagree. And Hub is making the case about the Patrick Mahomes proves that this is the way to do it. I also think you can argue that maybe if had they gone to Patrick Mahomes even earlier, he would have been great right away. You know, the because of the post hoc ergo propter hoc, to say that Patrick Mahomes was great because he sat. No, it's true. He sat and became great. There is that's a guess if you think he's great because he sat. He did sit and he was great, but he might have been great when they put him right in.
The other difference here, and we've talked about it ad nauseum to this point, and I can't wait until we're doing this every other hour during football season, is that Alex Smith was a playoff caliber quarterback.
Yes, do you think better than Andy Dalton?
Correct.
And they had already, what were they, 11-5 with him the previous year?
I remember calling for Mahomes early on in the season for some reason. I think I was just yelling on Twitter randomly, shocking no one. But people were like, no, it's not. It's too soon. But it was, given the fact that you could still win games considerably with the quarterback that was in Kansas City.
Yeah, the point being that I still have Trubisky failure PTSD. As a Bears observer. And it's not fair to Justin Fields for me to sort of project that and carry it over. But this is my concern is that this coaching staff didn't develop him. It's a fact. And maybe he won't ever develop, and maybe it's not their fault, but we don't know where one ends and the other begins. And I just hope that the experience, everything that went wrong with Trubisky, is making them better at this. Coaches can get better. And I'm not trying to say that Fields is Trubisky. I'm just saying that we were all whipsawed through that. I put in a lot of trust in that. I put in a lot of trust in 200 level, that he's not making the same mistake twice, night and day. We can play all those cuts. We can play all everything that was said about Trubisky. And it's just when I hear it again, I think, should I believe you this time?
Well, that's,
I want to.
That's a separate question.
But I want
to. It all goes back to the same idea of talent acquisition. And the metric and the measurement used to measure the talent that was previously acquired was incorrect. So when you start with the baseline, everything else is going to be messed up because it's an unstable foundation.
Let's squeeze in a quick call. This is Jeff in the home of the Bears, Arlington Heights, on the Score. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, guys. Listen to you every day. You know, I'm still waiting for somebody to give me some evidence that Matt Nagy is a good head football coach, because I haven't seen it yet since he's been here.
Well, that's not really fair. There have been some things that he's certainly done well.
Oh, wait a minute. I said a good football coach. I didn't say he hasn't done anything well. I said a good
he is a head football coach who has done some things well.
Okay. So does that make him a good head football coach? Since he's been here, for the most part, the Bears have sucked, except for the very first year when they won, I think, 12 games, and that was completely because of the defense. Matt Nagy really didn't have much to do with that other than the fact that he was the head coach.
He's the head coach.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, Dan. Do you think Matt Nagy's a good head football coach?
I don't know. I think he's a better head football coach than he is offensive coordinator. That I know for sure.
I was waiting for that to go off the rails. It did
yeah,
not.
I just, I don't get it. I don't know what he's...
I guess the question is, what does he think is a good football coach?
I don't know.
But to that end, I think the question is, all right, you finally have your talent. You even have guys who we didn't think were going to be producing at the level they're producing at, Jimmy Graham, and they still are. So now what?
Yeah,
now the onus is on you.
And also get out of your own way a little bit. If you say, well, I don't know if he can call that play, and I don't know if the terminology works or know what he's seeing. You meet him more than halfway. Go to him and say, what do you need? Not, well, you got to learn my system. He's the guy. You're not. He's the guy.
I'm still waiting to learn what Fred Hoiberg's system was for the Bulls.
Drag screens.
But you know what I'm saying.
They play with pace, even though they wouldn't play with pace.
At some point, you have to adjust for the talent that is on the field.
Younger and more athletic.
But, yes, people do improve. And Ryan Pace improved at his job, and I would hope that everybody else would follow suit.
The Midday Midway is coming up. We've had a Midway story sort of thrust upon us here. We've been left with no choice but to do this.
Yep, because sometimes when the people want something, it's your job to serve the people. That's it. You know what it is, and it's next.
Listen to The Score in crystal clear FM quality. Just go to 104.3 HD2 on your radio and hear your favorite Score personalities in FM quality sound. 104.3 HD2 is The Score in HD. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
It's time for the Midday Midway, and boy, do we have fun today. A lot of Bears stuff today. The out-of-town smart with Layla just sort of making fun of overly sentimental Bears fans when you're pointing out everything can actually be better if, in fact, the Bears move and build a place that's better and more comfortable and more convenient. And
I don't know. That stupid sports lady said Parks District instead of Park District, and I shouldn't even be bringing it up regarding an NFL team at all.
And Hub had a wide-ranging discussion of everything that is going on with the Bears as well, and I'm I really don't want the Fields development to in any way recapitulate some of what we heard regarding all the promises of Mitchell Trubisky's development, and I don't want to project it. I don't want to speak it into being. It's not fair for me to do it. I've still got anxiety that was caused by living the Trubisky experience.
I got two words for you. Read progression. When that's brought up, we panic. Fair?
Fair.
Okay. There was a tweet that was quote tweeted 9,031 times in the last roughly 18 hours. I believe 5,000 of those quote tweets were adding Bernstein and Rahimi and Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi. Okay. We feel you. You want us to do the story. We're doing the story. Lee Sanderlin tweeted that he was coming to people live from a Brandon, Mississippi Waffle House. He says, I, a total loser, came in last place in my fantasy football league. As punishment, I spend 24 hours in a Waffle House. Every waffle, specifically waffle, Dan, I eat, shaves an hour off the clock. It's 4:07 Central. So he showed us his progress as he ate multiple waffles. And at waffle number 5, he hit the 2,000 calorie mark.
And?
So then he was stuck in neutral 15 hours ago. At 7:07 Central, 3 hours, 4.75 waffles down. So many hours to go. He's only eaten 4.75 waffles at 7:07.
Do you get partial credit? Like, do you get 3/4 of an hour?
I'm not sure.
Or do you have to, is it only absolute? You polish off the waffle, gain an hour.
Yes.
So he's a 4 waffles in what, 3 hours? That's not impressive. That's not difficult. And I'm not just saying like, oh, I'm fat, so I eat a lot. Yeah, I know. Like jokes aside, 4 waffles in 3 hours is not a lot of food.
I'm picturing Jay Zawoski at his fantasy draft that has decided that this is going to be the punishment for the loser. And then you could actually see him start like tearing up. Like he turns all his draft board upside down.
With the number one pick, I select Nick Foles.
I take Patrick Scales, long snapper, Chicago Bears.
I lost. Oh, man. This is terrible. As my car peels away.
We never hear from Jay again. He's really happy about eating waffles. Lee said that at waffle number 6, 14 hours ago, he was eagerly staring to the abyss, hoping for it to all end. 4 hours down, he was at waffle number 6.
Well, this is the problem I have with this story, if I may.
Yes.
This is from KIRO.com. 7. From Atlanta, January 9th, 2021. A fantasy football league punishment turned into a reward for a Waffle House server who was given a $1,000 tip by the losing player made to spend hours at the restaurant. Michael Carsley knows the rules, finished last in their fantasy football league, and the bet is to spend 24 hours in a Waffle House. The only reprieve, an hour can be removed from the time for each waffle eaten.
Yes.
Carsley attempted to eat as many waffles as he could in order to reduce his 24-hour sentence. He live-streamed the meal, who ended up donating $1,000 for the server, okay?
Yes.
This is another story that I found, and this comes from the year before. This is January 10th, 2020.
Well, wait, you don't want to hear the thrilling conclusion of this?
Is he dead?
No.
Oh.
But he did leave 3 hours ago, and he ate 9 waffles in 15 hours.
That's nothing.
That's nothing.
The outrage.
This guy is soft as a grape. Come on. You can't eat a waffle an hour? If that's all you're eating?
Jay Zawoski, noted waffle eating
coach.
Come on,
am I wrong though?
Waffle eating coach.
I don't know that I can. I cannot eat a waffle an hour from Waffle House, no.
You can't eat a waffle an hour.
An hour for multiple hours?
Yes.
Yeah, you could. I mean, this is the third time this has been news. How many times are we going to do this story? This is from January of 2020. College sports broadcaster Cyrus Wittig was forced to undertake the Waffle House Challenge, which involves sitting in a Waffle House for 24 hours after losing his fantasy football league. It's the same story.
We have to do it. Waffle House is ours. Unless, of course, Spiegel or Parkins go to a Waffle House, then somehow it becomes theirs.
Snap!
But why do people just pretend to have not heard this before?
Why are you so mad about
because
it?
Because it's the third time. It's called the Waffle House Challenge. It's its own challenge.
Teams play multiple games, and we talk about those.
I know.
Quit yelling.
But it's just not news. I don't know. Unless if someone dies, it's news.
Well, you can't die from 9 waffles. My God. A coward.
I love how righteously angry
I'm
Jay
mad. This
I
is know. Ridiculous. Like, oh, my tummy hurts. Well, get out of fantasy football then. Join another league.
If you can't handle 9
Come
waffles.
On.
Or do it like the movie Diner, where you got to eat the entire menu in 24 hours. Or the left side. Or work your way down and just say, look, you've got to have scattered smothered covered. You've got to have steak and pork chops and everything else.
That's more difficult because it's usually laminated.
I love the I absolutely love the text line right now. 815. Jay's absolutely right. I'd be there for 3 hours to take down 24 waffles. I feel like a challenge is being issued. 708. I'd be up out of there in like 4 hours. # I'm a fat. I really enjoy this.
Thanks for using the correct hashtag. I'm trying it. I'll try this. If Mitch wants to sponsor me a trip down south, I will do this and I'll call in every hour. Be like, I just said 6. I said 7.
How do you feel about the summer in those parts right now?
Well, hot is hot. What are you going to do? And when you're in the South, being sweaty is more acceptable. I'll wear overalls and nothing else.
Look like Vince Wilfork?
Yeah. Like, or Hillbilly Jim, the wrestler.
Can I tell you a story about the last time I had a conversation with a guy wearing overalls and no shirt? It was pretty recently.
Yeah, how recent was it?
Yeah, right. How often does this happen?
This was Dateline 2007. I was in Tishomingo, Oklahoma, at a 3A high school football game. I believe between Tishomingo and Sulphur. And this guy looked at me. He's just standing on the fence. He didn't feel like sitting to watch the game. Which, hey, that's nice. Activity's good. And he looks at me and he goes, "You like at high school football, ain't you?" And I just go, "Yes, sir." "Yeah, y'all do a good job. Carry on. You too. Go Tish." The end.
And you're still together to this day.
Right. And that became Layla's husband.
You like it, high school football, don't you? Well, no, if that were my husband, he would have had at least more understanding of some of my interests.
And I'm thinking, Dad, I ain't ever seen one like that.
Where are my waffles?
That is the Midday Midway. And coming up next, it's Ian Happ, the apparently former podcaster who he used to do the Compound podcast, and I think he's out of the business now.
Will you say what you said during the break about this?
What, and with the dad energy?
Yes.
Fine. We'll do so. Ian Happ talks baseball next on The Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.